As we have studied on Sunday night the life of David, particularly, we've looked at, of course, Saul and starting out in the chapter of Samuel. But we've been kind of honing in on David. And as you know, David was known as a man after God's own heart. And it's certainly true that we found in the study of David's life, we have found many characteristics of in the life of David of really a godly man. A man who truly did, when we say a man after God's own heart, is to say that he had the heart of God in the sense that, and we talked about last week, did we not, that we talked about growing spiritually. And spiritual growth is our, as God works in our life to sanctify our lives and to make us more and more into the image of Christ, right? That's what spiritual growth is. Well, David was a man who loved God and he was growing and his life, in many ways, his character emulated godliness. We've noticed particularly, of course, back with David and Goliath and that story, we saw a great faith. And in that, I also see in David a passion for God. You know, he had a real passionate heart for God's glory, for God's honor. That's why he said those famous words when he came, he saw the battle and he heard the challenge of the giant and saw Israel doing nothing. And he said, "Is there not a cause?" I mean, you know, we are God's children, chosen people of Israel, and we're sitting here letting this man blaspheme our God and shame the name and the honor of God. Is there not a cause? And so he was just impassioned by the thought that the name and the honor of God is at stake here. And we cannot sit idly by and just let the enemy blaspheme God in such a manner. And so I see in David a real passion, a heart, just a desire for God to be glorified through his life and through the nation of Israel. The same passion is demonstrated when he wanted to build God a temple in the city of Jerusalem. It's interesting that, you know, David said to his friend, the prophet Nathan, he said, "You know, I'm living in a house of cedar and the ark of God is in a tent." And in David's heart again, he thought, that doesn't seem right. God deserves better than that. And Nathan said, "Do whatever's in your heart, David." Well, later, God spoke to Nathan and said, "You need to go back and tell David, it's good that it was in your heart to build a temple, but you're not going to build it. But I will allow your son Solomon to build it." And you know that story. But the Lord said this. He says, I'll just read this for you. It's in 2 Samuel, but we won't turn there. It says, "In all the places wherein I have walked with all the children of Israel, spake I a word with any of the tribes of Israel, saying, why build ye not me a house of cedar?" So in other words, God said, "You know, I never said you had to build me a temple." Which is to say that it was simply in the heart of David. The whole thing just originated because David loved the Lord. He wanted to honor God. He desired to, and God put it in his heart. We can understand that. But I'm just saying he was a man that had a great passion for God. And I really appreciate people who are passionate about their faith and about their love for God. They're not content to just kind of fly under the radar all the time. They want the name of God to be proclaimed and glorified and praised in public. And that's the kind of way David was. We saw even last week how he intentionally and loudly and shamelessly praised God. Anyway, David was a man who had a great passion for God. We saw also David was a man who had a compassionate heart like God. And I won't go through all the accounts, but you remember, and those on Sunday night, you know well how David had an opportunity, at least on two occasions, to kill Saul. And yet he didn't. Though Saul was very openly and actively trying to kill David, David would not take revenge. David had a heart of forgiving, a forgiving heart, and not a revengeful heart. He wouldn't take those matters into his own hands. And so, in many ways, we see humility, we see compassion, we see a lot of, again, godly characteristics in the life of David. And yet, we also know, if you know David's life, that he was, as all men, just a man. And men at their best are just men at best. In other words, just like it says about Elijah, he was a man of like passions such as we are. And so David had his faults as well. We know some famous sins of the life of David. The most well-known, perhaps, would be, of course, with Bathsheba. Later in David's life, he numbers the people, and God judged him harshly for that. And I say harshly, in a sense, there was great loss at that. But I find this chapter is one of these times where, you know, it's, a lot of times David's a hero, and we look up to David. But this was one of those times where we look at David and we shake our head. And we say, oh, David, why? Why did you do that? This is one of those times. I've called this the title of the message. I've called it When Faith Falters. There's a subtitle. I learned why people put subtitles, because I had two titles and I couldn't figure out which one to use. So they put a title and then they put a subtitle. So I had these two: When Faith Falters, and then A Portrait of a Backslider. The portrait of a backslider, I think, is probably what my mind thinks about most when I studied this chapter. Let's look at verse number 1 again. And we see here where this backsliding begins. David said in his heart, I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul. And then he makes this conclusion, there is nothing better for me than that I should speedily escape into the land of the Philistines. Now, as you read that verse and you read that chapter, there's something conspicuously absent from that, from this chapter. And that person is God. When David said, I shall surely one day fall into the hand of Saul, and he's going to kill me, David was listening to his heart. He said it in his heart. And now let me just give you, I only have 3 points on an outline. This number one is, he was deceived in his own heart. His heart deceived him to think that he was going to one day fall into the hand of Saul, that he was going to be killed. Now, we can kind of be sympathetic in the sense that David has been on the run for some time now. He's been hiding here and here and over there. And, you know, he was looking for a refuge. First he went to the priest at Nob and they couldn't help him. Then he went to the Philistines one other time, and he went to Samuel at one point. He's gone out into the wilderness. And so David's been on the run, and I understand that, you know, he's getting tired. And so he finally says, Saul's going to get me one of these times. But he said that in his heart. Now, we know, I think I'll have you turn to it. I'm debating whether we're going to turn to all these things, but you might as well, let's look at it together. Go to Jeremiah chapter 17, I believe. Let me make sure. Yeah, Jeremiah 17. While you're turning there, a lot of you know the name. Now, you want to hold your place. We'll come back to 1 Samuel. But Jeremiah 17. You know the name Steve Jobs, probably. The late Steve Jobs was the, I guess, founder, CEO for a while of Apple. and those things. A lot of you know more about him than I do. But I found this quote from Steve Jobs. He said, "Remembering that you are going to die is the best way I know to avoid the trap of thinking you have something to lose. You are already naked. There is no reason not to follow your heart." Now that's a common sentiment of the world, isn't it? You know, it's a mantra we hear all the time, in even in kids' movies and in everything, Disney, and everybody says, "Follow your heart, follow your heart." Steve Jobs says, "You know, knowing that you're going to die, there's no reason not to follow your heart." But as people who know the Bible, we know there's lots of reasons not to follow your heart. And one of the good reasons is knowing that you're going to die. Because, you know, we're going to stand before God one day. And many times our heart deceives us. If you're not aware of it, look, we're in Jeremiah 17. We'll start at verse number 5. Let's just start there. We'll get the context. And I got to catch up to you. Here we go. He says in Jeremiah 17:5, "Thus saith the Lord, cursed be the man that trusteth in man, and maketh flesh his arm, and whose heart departeth from the Lord." I'd like to read that one more time. Let's do it again. "Thus saith the Lord, cursed be the man that trusteth in man, and maketh flesh his arm," meaning his arm is strength, "and whose heart departeth from the Lord." Let's read on. "For he shall be like the heath in the desert, and shall not see when good cometh, but shall inhabit the parched places in the wilderness, in a salt land and not inhabited." Now, in contrast, verse 7, "Blessed is the man that trusteth in the Lord, whose hope is in the Lord, whose hope the Lord is. For he shall be as a tree planted by the waters, and that spreadeth out her roots by the river, and shall not see when heat cometh, but her leaf shall be green, and shall not be careful in the year of drought, neither shall cease from yielding fruit." That sounds a lot like Psalm 1. Now this famous verse, verse 9, "The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it?" And then he answers in verse 10, "I, the Lord, search the heart. I try the reins, even to give every man according to his ways and according to the fruit of his doings." But you see, if you think about all that was saying, we know that verse. He said, the heart is deceitful. Our hearts can deceive us. You know, our heart, when David's heart said to him, "Surely you're going to die by the hand of Saul, and there's nothing better for you to go into the land of the Philistines," that was his heart deceiving him. Because that's what his heart was saying, but yet David had the promises of God that he would be king. Did he not? David, Samuel came and anointed him and told him that he was going to be king. And many other times, God reaffirmed that to David. Jonathan, you remember the last time I used one of these chapters on the Sunday morning, was when Jonathan came and encouraged the heart of David in God. And Jonathan, who was, you know, in all, I guess, human wisdom, he was the next in line. He was the son of Saul. He was the prince apparent, or what do they call, you know, the next guy. And he knew, he said, "I'm not going to be the king, David. It's going to be you." And even a few weeks ago, we learned about Nabal and Abigail. When Abigail came and talked to David, and kind of headed him off before he came and killed her husband Nabal, she confirmed that he was going to be the king. Even Saul himself confessed at times that David, he knew David was to be king. So God told David he was going to be king. God confirmed it over and over again in David's life. So when David's heart said, "You're not going to get to be king, Saul's going to kill you," his heart was deceiving him. And so just think about that. That's many times where backsliding begins, is when we listen to our heart instead of listening to God's word. When our heart is not in line with what God says, we're being deceived by our own heart. Now, in that same chapter, we looked at, as I said, remember there was another Sunday morning when I used this 1 Samuel. And in that, we saw how Jonathan encouraged him. We saw how Saul really was closing in on him, but at the last minute, God delivered him. Remember that story? When Saul got word that the Philistines were attacking, he had to leave. And then earlier in that chapter, which I preached on Sunday night, there were three times when David inquired of the Lord. Once was when there was an opportunity, and there was people in Philistines had attacked, and Saul wasn't helping them, and David inquired and said, "Should I go?" And God said, "Go." And then later on, his men said, "Why are we going? And we don't want to go." And David inquired of the Lord again. And then when he was in the town and Saul was coming to capture him, he inquired of God and said, "Will these people give me up to Saul?" And God said, "Yeah, they will." So we see in there, David at times, he inquired of God. He asked the Lord. He sought God in these things. But this time he didn't. And here's in again one of the ingredients of failure. He listened to his heart instead of listening to the word of God. He didn't inquire of the Lord. Now, I want to say we can cut David some slack. I don't want to say it that way though, because we want to cut David some slack just because we're nice people. But actually, because the fact is, we can often be doing exactly what David's doing. Think with me for a moment. Here's what David's doing, basically, if I can break this down for you. David has been essentially living by the book. In other words, he's been doing right. Saul has unjustly been fighting against him, wanting to kill him, chasing him, accusing him of all manner of stuff. And David has been humbling himself. He's been taking it on the chin. He's been turning the other cheek. He's been not reviling again when he was reviled. David's been doing right. David's been checking himself. He's not been letting his anger and revenge and all those things happen. And that's what's been going on. And that's really key, in a sense, to what's going on here. Because I think what happens is, after a while, David is in his heart saying, "Look, I've been the one doing right. Saul's the one doing wrong. And shouldn't I expect things to begin to turn my way? You know? I mean, shouldn't my life be getting a little easier, Lord? I've been doing good. Why is it that I'm still out here hiding in the desert?" Do you understand what I'm saying? So many times, this is what we do. We feel like, "Hey, I've had a victory here. I've done right here, but still, life's not getting any easier." And that's when our hearts begin to say, "You know, God's not doing anything about this. You're going to have to do something about this." That's what happens. And that's what David does. Essentially, David says, "God said I was going to be king, but I'm not king. And all I am is hunted all the time by Saul. And one day Saul's going to catch me. And I got to do something about it. And the best thing I can think of is go to the Philistines." You see, the path of backsliding is when we are deceived by our own heart and we stop trusting the promises of God. And then there was a bunch of self-pity, I think, as well. Again, I don't want to be too hard on David, but you know, in verse 1, he says, I and me, over and over and over again. And when we start this self-pity down this road, we lose perspective. Things begin to look bigger than they really are many times. You know, there's a scripture, and you know it well, in Galatians chapter 6. I can't think of exactly the reference, but it says, be not deceived, God is not mocked. For whatsoever man soweth, that shall he also reap. Now, most every time I've ever heard a preacher use that, they use it negatively. You know, that if you sow sin, you're going to reap bad. But you know that verse is positive as well. Mm-hmm. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. Whatsoever a man soweth, he shall also reap. And David's been sowing not in the flesh, but in the Spirit. David's been sowing good. And if he would just believe that God's not going to be mocked, his promises aren't going to fail. It hasn't happened yet, but it will. Faith is the substance of things hoped for. The evidence of things not seen. And you read that chapter, you know where that is, that's Hebrews 11. You read that chapter of faith, and many of them died in faith, having never received anything in this life. But they were looking for a city who's had foundations, whose builder and maker was God. In other words, they lived on that the substance of faith. It never was like, you know, physical, but yet there was substance because they believed it. They trusted God. And Abraham dwelt in tents, but he believed God. And one day God would give that land to his descendants. And if David could just hold on to faith. But where does backsliding begin? It begins when we listen to our heart. We lose faith and trust in the promises of God. And we begin to take matters into our own hands. So David was, first of all, deceived by his own heart. Secondly, he was determined in his own mind. Back in 1 Samuel 27, he says, there's nothing better for me than that I should speedily escape into the land of the Philistines. There's got to be something better than that, David, isn't there? But this is what he's thinking. And so he, in verse 2, he arose and he passed over with the 600 men that were with him and all of their families. And he went to Achish. Now David, he set his own path. He said, you know, God's not going to change things. The only way things are going to change, I'm going to have to change them myself. And so he determines what he's going to do. Now, he had gone to the Philistines one other time. He went to Achish before. And you remember, especially those on Sunday night, but some of you will know the story. When he got there, things didn't go very well. I mean, he went to Achish is the king of Gath. Remember Gath? How many of you remember the name Goliath of Gath? Yeah. That's where Goliath was from. I mean, here's the guy that killed Goliath, and he's going to Goliath's hometown, where his family lived, you know. So the first time he went there, it didn't go very well, and David, to get out of it, he had to pretend to be insane. Remember that? He pretended to be mad. He let the spit run down his beard. He scowled around like a crazy guy. That's what he did. And finally they said, this guy's nuts. Get him out of here, you know. And that's how he got out. Because they probably would have killed him. But this time, he's going back to Gath. You know, as I said, David, there's got to be a better plan than that. But that's all his heart could come up with. Now this time, word had gotten around everywhere that David and Saul were enemies. That's the word on the street. David and Saul are no longer, they've had a big falling out. And so this time, Achish is a little more open to David because, you know, they have a common enemy, Saul. And so they figure they could be friends. And we'll see more of this as we get into this story a little further. But let me just give you one little point here, and then I'll move to the third point. He said, there's nothing better for me than to do this. He determined in his heart. He listened to his heart. He was deceived. He determined to do this. But here's what I want you to think about. He said, there was nothing better for me to do this. But it wasn't only David. There were 600 other men and their families. And there was his two wives and their family. So when he went to the Philistines, he took all these people with him. And here's a point. This is a subtle point, but it really is true, and I want you to understand it, is that when we backslide, we're not only affecting ourselves. There's influence on others. Every time. It was better. David thought it was better for him. Well, what about the 600? Is it better for them to have to follow you to the Gath and live amongst the Philistines? Was it better for them, David? No, it wasn't better for David, but it wasn't better for them. And so I just want you to understand that whenever a Christian gets out of the will of God, we listen to our heart, we begin to follow the road of backsliding, understand, sometimes we hear people and they say, well, it doesn't matter, it only affects me. Why should you care? Well, it doesn't only affect you. It's going to affect others around you. And sin is always that way. It affects your, and of course David had a following. He had 600 men following, which is kind of interesting. But he was a leader. And the more, the wider your influence, the wider the effect is going to be. But all of you have influence. If you're a parent, you affect your family, your children, your spouse. You have an impact on your neighbors. There's consequences that affect people. And we have to understand that. Just think if Paul would have been like Demas and hath forsaken us, having loved this present world. What would have been the effect? What would have been the impact of that? So never believe, never listen to the lie that it only hurts yourself. You're going to impact others, your church, your witness, your neighbors, your family. So now this is the portrait of the backslider. He was deceived in his own heart. He was determined in his own mind. Then number three, he was duplicitous in his actions. Notice the last part of this chapter, verses 5 and on. He goes to Achish. Excuse me. And in verse 5, he says to Achish, if I have found grace in thine eyes, let them give me a place in some town in the country that I may dwell there. For why should I dwell in the city with you? I know I didn't read it exactly, but that's essentially what he says. And what's he implying there? Well, of course, I think in somewhat in David's heart, he's thinking, I don't want to hang around Gath too long. There's still some of Goliath's family here, and they're big people. But he also doesn't want to be under the watchful eye of the king either. Because David's he's pretending here. And so he kind of feigns respect for the king. In other words, he says, I'm just a lowly guy. I shouldn't dwell in the royal city with you. I'll just live out in the country somewhere. That'll be fine. I want to come. I want your protection so Saul doesn't chase me anymore. But, I can be happy just in the cabin over in the woods somewhere. That's all I want. And in saying that, he's sort of pretending as though he's honoring the king. Now, did David have any honor for Achish? I don't think so. I mean, he cared two whits about Achish. But here's what happened. See, he had to ingratiate himself to the king of the Philistines. And when you are backsliding on the Lord, and you try to become friends with the world, you have to ingratiate yourself a little bit with the world. And in doing so, many times you have to sort of deny your true heart a little bit. Do you understand what I'm saying? You have to deny a little bit of your true who you really are. I mean, David was an Israelite. He was anointed the next king of Israel. But he's downplaying that. And he's pretending to be more in, you know, I'm more of a friend of the Philistines than I am of those guys over there in Israel. And sometimes as Christians, you know, when we want to get out in the world and we're backsliding on God and we begin to buddy up with the world and we downplay our who we really are, we're Christians, we bear the name of Christ. And that's the way we act. But it gets worse. In verse 7, here's another little note for you. It says that David dwelt there a full year and 4 months. Now, some of you may have a marginal note in your Bible. I don't have those marginal notes, but I do have other Bibles that have them. And in some margins it says it was a year of days. Well, all years are years of days, right? What does that mean? It essentially, I think, has the idea of time drug on, you know. It was like I heard a guy one time say, I forget what town, somebody mentioned a city in Florida. And the guy said, oh, yeah, I spent a year there one day. You know what that means? That means it was like, it was a day, but it felt like a year, you know. And that's the way this was. It was like, you know, when David and his men were in the land of the Philistines, don't think they were there having a lot of fun. They were backsliding. You know, the backslider really doesn't fit anywhere. He's not living with God's people doing right. He's over here, but he doesn't really fit in the world. And a lot of times they're miserable. It's a miserable place to be. And so time flies when you're having fun, but not so much when you're on the run from God. Anyway, his flock needed fed and some new clothes, and so David goes and he attacks some land. In verse 8, it says they invaded these lands, these people, the Amalekites, Gershites, and these other folks. And they were not, of course, Israel, and they weren't Philistines. They were other tribes, other nations that were there. And they weren't particularly allies of the Philistines, but they weren't the enemies of the Philistines either. They were more enemy of the Israelites. And so he attacks them. And did you remember what we read? It says he left none of them alive, lest they tell on him. Right? Then he comes back to Gath. And Achish, he shows up back in the land. Achish sees him. And now they have all this spoil. They have these camels and oxen and so on, and new garments. You know, they had come out of the wilderness before, and I'm sure they were a ragtag-looking bunch. But now they have some spoils. And so Achish says, where have you made a road today? Achish is saying, what have you been up to? You know, things are looking up for you. What's going on? And, you know, who have you attacked? And David gives him an answer like this. Oh, you know, the south of Judah. It was a vague answer. It's like when you ask your teenager, where are you going? Out. Well, I can see you're going out, but where out, you know? Oh, just out with some friends. You know, they're being real vague for a reason. And that's what David was doing. David said, well, you know, I was over there, down, you know, around the south of Judah there. And he misled Achish. Because look at the last verse. Achish says he's made himself, you know, Israel to abhor him. He thought he attacked Israel. And David let him think it. Because what's David doing? Again, he's trying to get in good with the king. Now, here's the bottom line, guys. A backslider, he's living a lie. That's the bottom line. He's living a lie. He's being deceptive on purpose. He purposefully led Achish to think that he was attacking Israel so that he would get in better with the king. And he's living this double life. That's what the backslider does. He lives a duplicitous life. He lives a double life. David wanted friendship with the world, but he was not prepared to burn his bridges with Israel. And so many times, you know, it's like that when Elijah said, "How long halt ye between two opinions?" You know, you're straddling the fence. You're one of those fence straddlers. You want to have one foot in the world. You want some friendship there, but you're not wanting to deny your citizenship of heaven. You want to have it both ways. But David couldn't keep that up for very long, because it's not very much longer, and Achish is going to go to war against Israel and says, "Okay, David, let's go to war. Let's take them on." Then what's David going to do? Do I go or do I stay? You know, he's in trouble now. That's a little later. But this is the life of the backslider. Do you see it? We let our own heart deceive us. We listen to our heart. We listen to the discouragement, to the self-pity. And we forget the promises of God. We don't trust anymore. We take matters into our own hands. And to take matters into our own hands and to maybe build some friendship with the world, we have to pretend to be something we're really not. And we begin to live a double life. We live the Sunday life, you know, when we put on the clothes and look the part of the Christian, and then in the world we're living just like the world. Monday to Friday we're denying everything about Christianity, but then we try to go back and, you know, that's what David was doing. And sadly, it happens too often to believers. David could only keep it up so long. When we allow our heart to deceive us, when we don't rest in God's promises, we start wallowing self-pity. You determine your own course, you drag others with you, and you begin to live a lie. Now, guess what? That's in my conclusion. The very next chapter, Saul goes and visits a witch. Remember that story? And in a really weird situation, Saul's told that in the next battle he's going to die. And in a very short time, Saul and his sons go into a battle and they're killed. Now here's my last point. David's faith faltered just yards short of victory. Had he held on just a little longer, God was about ready to give him the kingdom. Mm-hmm. And he does. God does. But don't you think, David, that year and 4 months in the Philistines' land? I said, we look at David in this chapter and we shake our head. And I imagine David looks back and shakes his head and thinks, why did I ever go there? If I could have just trusted God, God was about ready to work it all out. But instead, he listened to his heart. So many times, we're inches from victory, and we fall. And many times, even, you know, on the heels of victory, David had seen victories. So many times, and I've said this a lot, you know, when we're on the mountaintop, we're only one step away from falling. And we have to continue to guard our hearts. Let's stand together, we'll pray. I don't know where that message might touch your heart today. But I certainly know there's times when I've gone down that same path. And if there's anybody in that situation today, you know, you're living this double life and it's not fun. It's not, it's something that you regret, but you don't know how to get back. It's really as simple as going to the Lord and saying, Lord, I'm going to stop living the lie and really be who I know I am, your child. And get back on the side of Israel and God. Come out of the Philistine land. Come out of the world. And just walk with God. Let's pray together.